following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop looking out over London.
Good night and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight with Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Yay, it's
a campaign promise that you broke is not a national emergency. Baseless fear you tried to stoke is not a national emergency. Your ego needing a stroke is not a national emergency. But income inequality, rampant gun violence, and climate change all are being criticized by Fox News is not a national emergency. Alternative facts you prefer to use doesn't make something a national emergency. A needless war the Congress did refuse is not a national emergency. But voter suppression, partisan gerrymandering, and Russian interference in our elections are. Build a wall was just an election slogan, now it appears, but it's not a national emergency. Playing to your base's racist fears doesn't make immigration a national emergency. With illegal border crossings at their lowest in years, it's not a national emergency. But drug overdoses, underfunded schools, and the humanitarian crisis you created at the border are. Saying you didn't need to do this, but you wanted to do it faster, proves it's not a national emergency. Stealing resources from real problems that are vaster, for what is not a national emergency. Doing nothing for 2 years when you controlled all three branches, but now it's a disaster. It's not a national emergency. But an unhinged, racist, sexist, fact-denying, semi-literate, Putin-loving tyrant in the White House is.
Ah, yes, Lauren Mayer. Lauren Mayer and Lauren's comedy songs getting us started on a Friday. It's not a national emergency. There's lots of things that are, but of course, what Trump is declaring is not. And lots of news on that front. The House has introduced its disapproval measure. They're going to vote on it on Tuesday. I've got all that in the news. You know, it's Friday. Let's have a little bit more of the comedy, shall we?
President Trump may have committed obstruction of justice. And you're probably thinking, is this a rerun of The Daily Show? No, no. It's just that Trump keeps doing the same shit over and over again, all right? It's like that Netflix show, Russian Doll, only with way more Russians, all right? Anyway,
gotta talk to you about Russian Doll.
This time.
President Trump is denying another explosive claim over his efforts to fight off a series of investigations.
The Times reports President Trump called his hand-picked acting Attorney General Matthew Whitaker to ask whether U.S. Attorney Jeffrey Berman could be put in charge of the widening investigation into his former personal lawyer Michael Cohen. Berman had already been recused from the case.
Did you ask acting Attorney General Matthew Whitaker to change the leadership of the investigation into your former personal attorney Michael Cohen?
No, not at all. I don't know who gave you that. Just more fake news.
Okay, a little tip, Mr. President. If someone accuses you of something and you pause like that before you say no, it seems like you're lying.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like it if your mom was like, are you looking at porn? No. So the story is that President Trump asked Matt Whitaker to interfere in the Michael Cohen investigation, which is highly unethical. And he even rubbed Whitaker's head to see the future of the investigation, which is also highly unethical. Basically, right now, we're at the point where Trump may be obstructing justice into his obstruction of justice case, which is like a pickpocket who just got caught and the cop goes, you're busted, put your hands behind your... Wait a minute, where are my handcuffs? Oh, you scallywag!
Ah, yeah. So Trevor Noah having a little bit of fun at Donald Trump's expense, which is always good. I thought, you know, it being Friday, there's lots to talk about. Anyway, there's a lot in the news. I've got a whole bunch of stuff. So we may as well just hit it, shall we? And yeah, it's Friday, so we'll...
We'll do it live. Fucking thing.
I read the news today.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
All right. So breaking news. There's a lot of breaking news today. And in the grand scheme of things, it's not the most important story I'll report on today, but it just shows that karma is a bitch. I'm going to share with you this breaking news story as it appeared in my Twitter timeline, courtesy of my old friend and colleague Jim DeFede, who's now with the CBS own television station in Miami, CBS4. He wrote, "Robert Kraft, owner of the New England Patriots, has been charged in Palm Beach County with soliciting of a prostitute, according to Jupiter Police." Just so you know, Jupiter is about maybe a half hour north of West Palm Beach, very close to Mar-a-Lago, in fact, just pointing that out. The charges stem from a months-long investigation into a massage parlor. Kraft was one of 25 people charged in the case. This is weird. The rate was $59 for a half hour inside the massage parlor and $79 for an hour. Kraft is estimated to be worth $6.6 billion, just in case you were counting. Investigators claim Kraft was a regular visitor to the Orchid Spa, the Orchid Day Spa, and that there is a video of Bob Kraft inside. Jupiter Police Chief said he was stunned and that an active arrest warrant has been issued for Kraft. Another detail: Kraft had his chauffeur drive him to the massage parlor. Now, as you would expect, Twitter was all a Twitter about this story. A lot of people taking some glee in the fact that Robert Kraft, you know, an old friend of Donald Trump's, was busted. You know, just the ickiness of the story overall. But a number of people pointed out, and I'll do it via tweet, Chris Jansing of MSNBC wrote, "Patriots owner Robert Kraft being charged with soliciting prostitution related to what Florida police say is a massage parlor where women who were told they were coming to the U.S. for legitimate jobs were in fact held as virtual prisoners slash sex workers." This is a story about human trafficking. And as much as we all may take some sort of weird delight in the fact that Robert Kraft was busted for... For visiting this day spa, and there are two counts, meaning they have footage of him or they have surveilled him in that establishment on two occasions, at least. And somebody from SportsCenter, I think that's an ESPN thing, said that they know that they heard it from a good source that Robert Kraft was not the biggest name captured in that bust. Oh, please let it be Tom Brady. Please let it be Tom Brady. Anyway, a spokesperson for Kraft released the following statement, quote, "We categorically deny that Mr. Kraft engaged in any illegal activity. Because it is a judicial matter, we will not be commenting further." Of course. And you know that, obviously, he's worth $6.6 billion. You know he's going to mount a defense, and he'll probably get off because billionaires do. But again, this is a story about human sex trafficking. And hopefully, and the bust, it wasn't only this massage parlor. There were like 10 of them in the area in Palm Beach County, Florida. Go figure. In a somewhat related story, there's a few somewhat related stories today, by the way. Singer R. Kelly was finally arrested this morning and charged with 10 counts of aggravated criminal sexual abuse in Cook County, Chicago, this morning. So good that that finally happened. And in another related story, because not only is Donald Trump friendly with Kraft, he's also good friends with, what's his name? Jeffrey Epstein. Jeffrey Epstein, one of the more despicable creatures who still roams the planet. A federal judge yesterday ruled that prosecutors under former U.S. attorney and current U.S. Secretary of Labor Alex Acosta, they broke the law when they concealed a plea agreement for more than 30 underage victims who had been sexually abused by Jeffrey Epstein. The judge gave federal prosecutors 15 days to confer with Epstein's victims and their attorneys to come up with a settlement. The victims apparently did not seek any money or damages as part of the deal. As part of the lawsuit. Earlier this month, the Department of Justice announced it was opening a probe of the case in response to calls from three dozen members of Congress. Nebraska Senator Ben Sasse, the Republican chairman of the Senate Judiciary Oversight Committee, yesterday asked the DOJ to reopen Epstein's plea deal. By the way, you know who Epstein's attorney is? Again, remember, this guy is worth many millions, if not billions of dollars. And that's why he gets away with this shit. His attorney is Ken Starr. Ken Starr, yes, the man who led the impeachment efforts, the investigation against Bill Clinton for getting a blowjob. I'm not excusing what Bill Clinton did, but just saying, boy, talk about hypocrisy. Now on to the other news about that national emergency. Today, House Democrats introduced a joint resolution to block Trump's emergency declaration. It's one page long. It declares, quote, "The national emergency declared by the finding of the president on February 15, 2019 is hereby terminated." Nancy Pelosi today said the House will vote on Tuesday. So they're somehow pushing this thing through a lot faster than the procedure usually allows for. It will then be guaranteed a vote in the Senate within 18 days. Things won't be as easy to pass in the Senate because obviously it's still controlled by the Republicans. Democrats need to pick up at least four Republican votes in the Senate for it to pass. Susan Collins, who we don't trust, she said it anyway yesterday, became the first Republican to say she'd vote in favor of this resolution. Others have publicly criticized Trump's emergency declaration. And so the ones who have and the ones to watch, hoping that they'll come over to the, you know, the bright side, the light side, at least to hold Trump accountable for this nonsense. Lisa Murkowski, Tom Tillis, Lamar Alexander, Cory Gardner, Marco Rubio, Mitt Romney, he doesn't have any backbone, Mike Lee, Rand Paul, and Jerry Moran, or is that Moron of Kansas? Anyway, so they're possible yes votes on this resolution to overturn Trump's emergency declaration. If the resolution passes the Senate, it then goes to Trump for his signature or his first veto. If he vetoes it, then it goes back to Congress, who can override it. And if Congress can't override the veto, there are already about half a dozen lawsuits working their way through the courts. So that's happening. Now, as we're hearing reports that the Mueller probe is winding down, one thing we know for sure is that Mueller's sentencing memorandum in Paul Manafort's case is due to be delivered to a D.C. federal judge before midnight tonight. And reports say that this report, the sentencing memo, could give us the most insight we've gotten into Mueller's case as a whole. CNN's reporting that it's the last major requisite court filing in Mueller's longest-running case, his case against Manafort, the prosecution of the former Trump campaign manager that led investigators to gather exhaustive information about his hidden Cyprus bank accounts, Ukrainian political efforts in Europe and the U.S., and into Manafort's time in the 2016 presidential campaign. CNN continues, prosecutors are set to outline all the facts they believe the judge should consider at his sentencing, which is now set for March 13th. That will likely include Manafort's criminal business schemes, his attempt to reach out to key contacts after his arrest, and the lies he told to prosecutors and a grand jury even after he agreed to cooperate with the Mueller investigation. So that should drop before midnight tonight. And what, you know, all this news has been breaking like at 6 o'clock on Friday evening. So I would think, the cable news channels will have some interesting programming tonight. We were talking about this yesterday a little bit. Voters in North Carolina's 9th congressional district are heading back to the polls. The State Board of Elections voted unanimously in favor of holding a new election yesterday after another dramatic day of testimony in which the Republican candidate, Mark Harris, finally admitted the election was flawed. Oh, shit, I didn't play for you. Sorry. I'll play it after. CNN has more.
This hearing started off with a bombshell. A worker who basically confirmed everything that people had suspected, saying that she was paid to illegally collect ballots, fill in forms, do things that she wasn't supposed to do. It continued with a testimony from the candidate's son, who happens to be an assistant U.S. attorney, saying that, look, I warned my dad about this guy. And by the way, here are the emails, the paper trail proving that. And today, the candidate himself, Mark Harris, got up on the stand, began to testify. And then suddenly, just before lunch, his attorneys asked to take a little recess. They wanted to talk with the general counsel. By the time they came back, about an hour and a half, 2 hours later, Aaron, he stood up on the stand. And apparently, the testimony had, well, convinced him as well. Take a listen.
Through the testimony I've listened to over the past 3 days, I believe a new election should be called.
Unbelievable.
It's become clear to me that the public's confidence in the 9th District seat general election has been undermined to an extent that a new election is warranted.
He was hoping that initially, at the beginning of this, that the board was going to go ahead and let him take this seat that he initially had said he won. So at this point, where we are is that the board is going to have to set a new election that includes a primary and potentially even a second primary, depending on how many people get in and what those are, and then another new election.
Well, it's unclear whether or not Harris will run again. I tend to think not. First of all, he blamed everything, health problems and issues and memory and strokes and things, on why this was allowed to happen. He was bullshitting his way through. But chances are Harris will not run again. So there will be primaries, at least on the Republican side, and it starts all over again. The Washington Post noting that this is probably the first such do-over in American history. And interesting, isn't it, that Donald Trump has tweeted so much about voter fraud, which doesn't exist, but here we have actual bona fide election fraud, and he hasn't said a word about it. By the way, this is the kind of story that we've spoken with Greg Palast numerous times about over the last many years. Greg Palast is going to join us in about 15 minutes or so. And I'm sure we'll talk about this quite a bit, or a little bit anyway. What I'm really going to talk to Greg Palast about is what's going on in Venezuela, where all hell has broken loose today. Shots have been fired at civilians. It's really ugly, but it's a lot more complicated than what we've been told. And if you follow the story, maybe you're as confused as I am. So Greg Palast will join us again at the bottom of the hour to talk about all this stuff. I understand that this is a story that has to be covered because it's just so horrendous. And that's the story of this actor, Jussie Smollett, from the Fox TV show Empire. He was back on the set last night, just hours after he was arrested and accused of filing a false report in this January 29th incident in which he said he was the victim of a hate crime. Well, apparently he gets to work at the set of Empire, and Smollett called a meeting of the cast and crew and apologized for any embarrassment they might have felt during his alleged hate crime attack saga. But a person who was there said they were shocked and dismayed when Smollett stuck to his story and claimed that he was innocent and blamed the media and the legal system for his troubles. The really weird part is police say Smollett paid these two brothers $3,500 to stage the attack in a bid to advance his career. How that would advance his career, I don't know. And what he just proved is that he's a fucking moron because he wrote a check. Just saying. The Chicago police superintendent tore into him, saying the actor took advantage of the pain and anger of racism to promote his career, adding bogus police reports caused real harm. The only reason I'm even mentioning it is because hate crimes are happening at an alarming rate. And the uptick happened in conjunction with Donald Trump being elected president. Because he is a hateful, bigoted, racist piece of shit who likes to foment violence and bigotry. And you know what? And this is a perfect time to mention this. So Donald Trump tweeted numerous times about this Jussie Smollett story, of course, blaming, you know, the fake news and the liberals, and of course, you know, putting the blame on liberals are not the problem. Jussie Smollett is the problem here. But it's now more than 36 hours after news broke that a Coast Guard officer, an avowed white nationalist, was allegedly plotting to kill Democratic politicians and journalists. And Donald Trump has, at least so far, not said a word, not tweeted a word, not said a word, nothing about this domestic terrorist who was arrested with plans to annihilate Democratic politicians and liberal-leaning broadcasters. So this morning, out in front of the White House, Sarah Huckabee Sanders was seen wandering around. Now, she doesn't do the White House press briefings anymore, but she was out there, and so a reporter asked her a question.
A white nationalist, he was planning a plot against Democrats, against journalists. The president has tweeted that journalists, the media, they're the enemy of the people. Is there any plans for the president to maybe tone down his rhetoric? And do you think this contributes to these sorts of extremists getting these ideas?
I certainly don't think that the president at any point has done anything but condemn violence.
What?
Against journalists or anyone else. In fact, every single time something like this happens, the president is typically one of the first people to condemn the violence, and the media is the first people to blame the president. We should all join together and start condemning the violence, whether it's against members of the media, whether it's against Democrats, Republicans, any person in this country. That is unacceptable, and that's why every time it comes up, we have been consistent and repeatedly said that we condemn violence in all forms.
Oh, my God. Quote, the president and the entire administration have condemned violence in all forms, as we have stated many times. Really? I have a montage that I've played before. I won't play that. But how about this? 2017, Montana. Candidate for Congress, Greg Gianforte, bitch slaps a journalist from The Guardian, a guy named Ben Jacobs. And remember how Donald Trump condemns violence in all forms, right?
Any guy that can do a body slam, he's my kind of... He's my guy. I shouldn't say this because there's nothing to be embarrassed about. So I was in Rome with a lot of the leaders from other countries talking about all sorts of things.
Yeah.
And I heard about it. And we endorsed Greg very early. But I had heard that he body slammed a reporter. And he was way up. And I said, oh, this was like the day of the election or just before. And I said, oh, this is terrible. He's going to lose the election. Then I said, well, wait a minute. I know Montana pretty well. I think it might help him. And it did.
Yeah. What did Sarah Sanders say? The president and the entire administration have condemned violence in all forms, as we have stated many times. She also didn't respond to the question about whether Trump planned to tone down his rhetoric.
If you see somebody getting ready to throw a tomato, knock the crap out of them, would you? Seriously. Okay? Just knock the hell. I promise you, I will pay for the legal fees, I promise. The guards are very gentle with him. He's walking out like big high fives, smiling, laughing, like to punch him in the face, I'll tell you. All right, yeah, get him out. Try not to hurt him. If you do, I'll defend you in court. Don't worry about it. Hillary wants to essentially abolish the Second Amendment. By the way, and if she gets to pick her judges, nothing you can do, folks. Although the Second Amendment people, maybe there is. I don't know.
The Second Amendment people, maybe there is something you can do about it. No, Donald Trump and the entire administration have condemned violence in all forms, as we have stated many times.
Bullshit.
That's what this administration feeds you. Bullshit. Speaking of bullshit, Roger Stone was back in D.C. federal court yesterday, ordered to appear by the judge after Stone's Instagram post on Monday that featured an image of the judge with crosshairs in the corner.
A federal judge banning Roger Stone from speaking publicly about his case, warning him if he violates the order, it will land him in jail. Stone took the stand to tell Judge Amy Berman Jackson he was heartfully sorry for posting what could be considered threatening image of her to his Instagram on Monday. He claimed the image, which showed the judge with crosshairs over her shoulder, was a screw-up and a stupid lapse of judgment, and insisted the crosshairs were misinterpreted. But Judge Jackson said the apology rang hollow, adding, there's nothing ambiguous about crosshairs. The judge had already put a lenient gag order on Stone. Today, she banned him from talking publicly about the case in any venue, warning him there will not be a third chance. She also banned others from speaking on his behalf. The judge had ordered Stone to make the trek from Florida and appear in court after his post, which included a caption that called special counsel Robert Mueller a deep state hitman and claimed Stone's case was a show trial. Stone also implied that Jackson was biased because she was an Obama appointee. He rounded out his post with hashtag fixes in. He altered the text about Mueller and added a few more hashtags. That post was also taken down. The same day, Stone filed a formal apology to the judge. I had no intention of disrespecting the court and humbly apologized to the court for the transgression. The judge and the prosecutor questioned the sincerity of Stone's apology, given his other public comments.
When the judge issued a gag order that did not limit my First Amendment rights, the left went completely insane. That's why they have cooked up this false narrative. I threatened no one. I intended to threaten no one. I never disrespected the judge or the court.
Bullshit.
Stone's legal troubles came to a head last month when he was arrested at his Florida home in a pre-dawn raid.
29 armed FBI agents, 17 vehicles, all an unnecessary expenditure paid for by the taxpayers for the theater of it to create a public image of me as guilty before. I get an opportunity to prove that I'm innocent.
He pleaded not guilty to 7 charges of obstruction, making false statements, and witness tampering.
Sadly, the judge didn't imprison Roger Stone yesterday. I would have, if I were the judge and this asshole put up a picture of me on the internet with a crosshairs in the photo. But she warned him. She gave him one more chance, said you don't get a third chance. But she was pretty tough on him. But not tough enough. An amazing story from the Daily Beast today. Let's check this out. The Daily Beast asked each presidential campaign, either up and running or in its exploratory phase, whether they'd commit to not knowingly using or referencing hacked material that appears online on grounds that it may have been obtained illegally. Every Democrat running for the White House, yes, including Bernie Sanders, every Democratic candidate running for the White House has pledged not to knowingly use such material should they end up being published during the current election cycle. Only one 2020 campaign declined to make such a commitment. Guess who that was? Come on. Of course, Donald Trump. Here from the article at the Daily Beast, numerous attempts to obtain comment from the Trump campaign were not returned. But after publication, Kayleigh McEnany, the Trump campaign's national press secretary, sent the following note, quote, "We're not in the business of taking pledges invented by the liberal online media." Just let that sink in for a moment. By the way, speaking of the Trump administration, today they issued a new rule that denies federal funds to any clinic that provides abortion or abortion referrals. Game on. It's ugly. It's really happening. There's more detail. This story just broke not too long ago, but here, let me read from the Washington Post. Trump administration took aim at Planned Parenthood Friday, issuing a rule barring groups that provide abortions or abortion referrals from participating in the $286 million federal family planning program, a move that is expected to direct millions toward faith-based providers. Religious organizations. Under the new mandate, which opponents vow to challenge in court, federally funded family planning clinics can no longer refer a patient for abortion and will have to maintain a, quote, clear physical and financial separation between services funded by the government and any organization that provides abortions or referrals for abortions. Receipts of grants under the Title X program, which serves mostly low-income women, were already prohibited from performing abortions with those funds. Unbelievable. But it just continues. It keeps going. And that's why we're in the mess we're in. All right. Finally, let me read to you the story that I pulled on what's happening in Venezuela as an intro to Greg Palast, who's going to join us in just a moment. This was from CNN. Embattled Venezuela President Nicolas Maduro has ordered that his country's border with Brazil be closed, quote, completely and absolutely in an escalating fight over foreign humanitarian aid. In a TV address, Maduro also threatened to shut the border with Colombia in order to stop the Venezuelan opposition from bringing in relief, including medical supplies and food. Maduro doesn't want aid brought in because he insists there isn't any crisis and has called the aid delivery plans a publicity stunt orchestrated by the United States. Opposition leader Juan Guaido is leading a convoy from the capital, Caracas, to the Colombian border to collect the food and medicine being stockpiled there. The Venezuela-Brazil border usually closes at midnight or at night, but normally opens at 8 a.m. local time. Many Venezuelans rush to the Brazilian city of Pacarema to stock up on supplies after the announcement. Okay, that said, I admit to you that I'm not only a little confused, but not... I don't know what to make of the situation in Venezuela. I've read a lot on it. I see sort of both sides. But it wasn't until I read Greg Palast's piece. Hi, Lenny, it's Nicole Sandler calling for Greg Palast.
Hi, Nicole. Yeah, he's right here.
Okay. At gregpalast.com, there's a few pieces on Venezuela, including the latest one, In Venezuela, White Supremacy is a Key to Trump's Coup. Hey, Greg Palast.
Hey, Nicole, how are you?
I'm doing okay. How are you doing? I know you've been busy lately.
Well, I'm pissed off is what I'm doing.
Okay.
I just read the New York Times. By the way, I just was in New York meeting with New York Times. Like,
ooh,
they're going to really give a damn about anything that matters, about anything, about voting. They decide, oh, maybe there's some vote suppression in America. Hello, it's 2019. Glad you got the message.
Yeah,
they were distracted lying about Venezuela.
Right.
And like they said, they had a whole article about Trump, you know, that man who with the big heart who is delivering food to save the Venezuelan people on the border.
Yeah.
And they said, oh, there's been violence. Now, I noticed the report was from Caracas, so these people were several hundred miles from the border. Then they admitted that they got the information from the Trumpite Venezuelan opposition, the people working with Trump.
Right.
So that's the type of news we get. And it said, oh, Venezuela is suffering because of corruption and incompetence of the government. Not one word, Nicole, not one word about a vicious U.S. embargo, about the vicious U.S. theft. Here's what the U.S. has done. We've taken Donald Trump and Steve Mnuchin, our Secretary of Treasury, mm-hmm. have grabbed all the oil money that's owed to Venezuela.
Wait.
The United States is the number one buyer of Venezuelan oil. We've simply grabbed and expropriated all the money. We've expropriated Venezuela's oil properties here. That's Citgo, Citgo gas stations,
right,
et cetera, and refineries. They've seized those. So they starve Venezuela of billions of dollars. They say, oh, look, they don't have enough money to feed their people. Oh, let's send them. And this is enough food for a couple thousand people for a couple weeks. Literally, that's it. Right? So it's a gimmick. It's a pure PR stunt by Trump and his cronies. And that's all being done while they're withholding billions of dollars from the government. And the government says, we're not beggars. Give us our money.
We're
not short of food. We're short of our own money. And the British government has withheld $1.5 billion worth of gold,
wow,
which is in the British Treasury that belongs to Venezuela. They won't release it to the Venezuelan government. They say, oh, because they're a terrible dictatorship. Well, here's what the real reason is. A few months ago, British Petroleum asked that it take over the oil fields which were being drilled by Total of France. And the Maduro government said, no, the Venezuelan government's going to keep those fields. We're not going to give it to British Petroleum. In other words, they were happy to work with the so-called dictatorship of Venezuela if they gave them the oil fields, but they wouldn't. And then they said, oh, well, guess what? You don't give us the oil fields, we're not giving you back your gold, which is in our treasury. And, you know, when Hugo Chavez took all the gold out of the U.S. Federal Reserve that belonged to Venezuela and had it shipped down to Caracas, everyone said, oh, he's crazy. What do you think, that the U.S. is just going to steal their gold? Well, yeah, they will. They did. And the British government did. So all I can tell you is, Nicole, I'm in a bad mood about this because the lies are deep, and it's Democrats who are going along with a lot of Democrats, not all of them.
Well, that's why I wanted to talk to you today to get the story. So can we start with some background, Greg Palast? I know you've been reporting on Venezuela. You you interviewed Hugo Chavez for the BBC back in 2002. So tell us a bit about how things were under Chavez in Venezuela.
Okay, here's the story. I was covering Venezuela and Hugo Chavez for BBC Television and the Guardian newspaper of Britain.
Mm-hmm.
Those, you know, unlike the New York Times, we're news outlets.
Right.
And at any rate, so I met with Hugo Chavez several times, and by the way, with the opposition several times.
Okay.
And the current president Maduro came to meet with me in my offices in New York. I've met with the opposition, but here's what you have to know. According to the CIA, which has, by the way, a great source of information, is the CIA fact book.
Hmm.
It's one of the few places where you get actual facts.
You have a link to it, you have a link to it, by the way.
GregPalast.com.
Yep.
And here's what they said about, here's what the CIA says about Hugo Chavez. Social investment in Venezuela during the Chavez administration reduced poverty from nearly 50% in 1999, when he took office, to about 27% in 2011. So it cut poverty rate in half.
Right.
Continuing, increased school enrollment, substantially decreased infant and child mortality, and improved access to potable water and sanitation through social investment. That's the CIA's fact book on Venezuela. Now, but the lie book, which is, you know, and I'm saying the New York Times and National Petroleum Radio and MSDNC and the rest of them is that Hugo Chavez is a terrible and now his successor Maduro terrible dictators. And I remember, and I'm literally looking at an article from the New York Times from 2002, where it says Hugo Chavez has resigned because he recognizes how unpopular and incompetent he is, so he's resigned. In fact, I broke the story. I was in London working with The Guardian and BBC. I broke the story that he was taken hostage. He didn't resign.
Wow.
I asked the New York Times, where did you get this story that Hugo Chavez had resigned? Oh, from the State Department. Now, I got to tell you, Nicole, if Greg Palast went to my bosses at The Guardian and said, Hugo Chavez resigned, where'd you get that? Oh, the Foreign Office, the British Foreign Office of the U.S. State Department, I'd have been fired on the spot.
Of course, right.
So here's the thing. So, look, Hugo Chavez, and then what happened was 1 million people came out of the poor areas of the city and surrounded the presidential palace and said they were going to kill the coup plotters unless they returned Hugo Chavez to his desk with his hair properly combed, and they did return within 48 hours. They returned him within 4 hours because they were scared to death.
So it's the poor people. It was the regular people in Venezuela who loved Hugo Chavez.
That's right. And here's the deal. You want to know the story. I have a story called In Venezuela, White Supremacy is a Key to Trump's Coup. And this is Trump's coup.
Yep.
Now, let me remind you. There's a guy trying to call himself, who has literally pronounced himself president, literally proclaimed himself president, named Juan Guaido.
Right.
Now, he's never run for president. It's not like he's saying, oh, I ran for president and they cheated me out of the job or anything like that. He's 35 years old. He's white.
Yep.
Speaks English very well. Mm-hmm. Went to George Washington. It's very important that you understand it's white.
Yes.
Then he made the announcement, and this is very important also, Nicole, within hours of speaking to Donald Trump, who said, if you declare yourself president, I'll recognize you as president. Now, the you have Democrats like Amy Klobuchar or whatever mm-hmm. she calls herself these days. You know, I know that she's vicious to her staff, but
yes,
I don't
I've
care about that.
Too.
It's about being vicious to the people of Venezuela.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's all for the coup d'etat that's been planned by Trump. When did Trump, by the way, become such a genius in foreign policy?
Well, he's not.
But if you look at my site, here's the deal. I want people to go to my website. I usually don't force you, but I'm going to force you in another window. Don't don't lose this show.
Right.
But at some point, go to gregpalace.com.
Because you need to look at these pictures. Right. You need to see the picture of Juan Guaido and his wife and his family, and then the
nice white people that the New York Times ran on their on their front page and in their and the top of the op-ed page. I'm picking on the New York Times because they're supposedly the best, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, take a look at the two other pictures here. One is a picture of the opposition in Congress, in the Venezuelan Congress. That is the people who are now backing this guy, self-proclaimed, Trump-proclaimed President Guaido. If you look at them, there's the members of the opposition. Oh, there's about 40, I'd say about 50 deputies in there. Everyone, and I mean, I'm looking very carefully at the faces. Oh, there may be two. I think all but of two of about 40, 50 are white, white.
Very
now,
white.
This is in a nation. This is in a nation like Mexico, which is mostly mestizo, that is, or as Hugo Chavez put it, negro e indio, that is black and indigenous combination.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because they had a lot of slaves brought to Venezuela. So that's most of the population is dark. Now, that's the 50 white opposition deputies. Look down, and there's 100 pro-government deputies in another photo, like kind of class photo, same thing, identical photo in front of this, in front of the Congress. So the government pro-government party, you look at about 100 people, maybe 120, and almost every single one, I can count three or four white faces, but almost every single one is a shade of brown or black.
Yep.
That's a story. It's about making Venezuela white again. It is about a racist, white supremacist takeover by the white, rich elite. And let me tell you, they are rich.
Hmm.
It's a white, rich elite who Donald Trump is supporting to take over Venezuela. And by the way, not inconsequentially, what nation, pop quiz, what nation has the largest reserves of oil on the planet?
I was going to say Venezuela.
Ah, 100 points for Nicole. Yeah, yeah, it's not inconsequential that the black people are sitting on the oil that, by the way, is being claimed by Exxon, and our guy John Bolton, the NSA chief, the neocon freak, and he's nice and white, too. He's like albino. So the albino NSA chief has actually said, we are talking with U.S. oil companies about Venezuela's to take Venezuela's assets for its people. So how does Exxon and Chevron take Venezuela's assets for its people? The way that they've taken Citgo assets?
Sure.
By keeping them?
Right.
So it's about, and there's these, so, and now we are embargoing this state, embargoing this nation, so that there's starvation there. And I have to say, there's one senator, Tulsi Gabbard, who has said
she's
we are using
congresswoman,
starvation.
But not a senator.
Yes,
but,
who is running for president. Sorry, congresswoman from Hawaii, running for president, who has said using starvation, coercion, and threats of violence, because we've now said also, Trump says, I'm not ruling out military action, has his little white puppet, white glove puppet, Guaido. He's actually inviting military action by the U.S. Can you imagine if someone in the U.S. invited a foreign army in because we didn't like Trump? I mean, we may not like Trump, but we are not inviting, you know, France in to overthrow our government.
Okay.
So anyway, this is my rant. This is Greg Palace. Goodbye.
No, you're not yet. Not yet. So now, let me back up a little bit. So you're not saying that Maduro is a great guy. He's not done a great job ruling Venezuela. Since he took office in 2013, as you write, the price of oil collapsed. I'm reading from your piece, the vast social programs that oil paid for. Now, by borrowing money and printing it, caused wild inflation. The economic slide is now made impossibly worse by what the UN rapporteur for Venezuela compared to medieval sieges. I mean, things went downhill fast in Venezuela, and now people are starving. Things are not going well.
But do notice that. Well, I know Maduro, and I think he's over his head. I don't think he's the right man for the job in a crisis.
Okay.
And very frankly, I think that you know, sometimes, like I remember with the Sandinistas in the 80s, where you have to see the writing on the wall, the U.S. is embargoing this nation. Unless, you know, it's their oil or their lives. And frankly, I think that they have to see the writing on the wall and cut some deals here. Because, you know, we don't worry about the dictatorship in Saudi Arabia. We call them royals. Well, you know what royals are? In Saudi Arabia, they're just
lucky sperm club.
Bathrobes.
Oh, I was going to say
they're dictators in bathrobes.
Right.
And then the oil dictatorship, the murderous oil dictatorship of Azerbaijan. Most people don't even know where that is.
Right.
The murderous oil dictatorship in Kazakhstan, where we get oil.
Where my daughter is from.
Dictatorship.
Yep.
And you know, look at Bahrain. Look at all these nations, which are nothing but vicious dictatorships. And suddenly we're worried about democracy. And here's the trick. Maduro, whether I think he's the best choice or not, doesn't matter. Those black and brown people in Venezuela who make up the majority of the population voted for him. And you know what? They voted for him.
Yep.
And that should count. That, in my book, when you win an election, that's called democracy. When you overthrow a government, and say, we're going to install a guy who never even ran for office, how is that restoring democracy? And by the way, I do want to call out some woman who claims to be a United States senator. Her name is Gillespie. I don't know if you've ever heard of her.
No. Nope.
If you've heard of her, forget her.
She's not a senator.
Because what she said was, we have to restore, this is a quote, we have to recognize the government of Juan Guaido because he was legitimately elected. Senator Gillespie, what was the date of that election? I can't find it anywhere. Even Juan Guaido does not claim that he was elected. So this is Gillespie. This woman wants to be president of the United States.
Who is she?
So, you know, I mean, I'm sorry.
I've never heard of her. You know, there's also, I'm down here in Florida, by the way, and there's a story in Politico today that Democrats in Florida are blasting Bernie Sanders for refusing to call Maduro a dictator. So Donna Shalala, who is a new replaced Ileana Ross Leighton in Miami in Congress, just tweeted out not too long ago, I'll make it clear, she tweeted, Senator Sanders does not reflect the majority of the Democratic Party and our support for Venezuela's interim president, Juan Guaido, and the Venezuelan people. Maduro is a dictator and must go, she wrote.
And that's why, see, because she's in that Cuba district.
Yep.
This is why these people have, first of all, and you got even worse from Claire Wasserman Schultz,
Debbie, right?
Who was the criminal leader of the
DNC.
Of the Clinton cabal.
Yep, yep.
And when I say criminal, I'm not just making up stuff. Okay,
I hear you.
I investigated that, and what she did to Bernie Sanders, which is moving money from the Democratic Party into the Clinton campaign, is a direct and criminal violation of the campaign laws. So now, after they commit crimes against Bernie Sanders, they want to slander him because he is uninterested in overthrowing a democracy of black people with a white guy picked by Donald Trump. And when she says the Democratic Party,
yep.
I didn't know that Donald Trump was now head of the Democratic Party.
Nope. Nor did
I. I mean, her party, yes.
I'm still going.
Clintonite party, yes.
Now,
So
how did Juan Guaido, if there was no election, I know he's the former speaker of Venezuela's National Assembly.
Yes.
How did he become the anointed interim president, according to Donna Shalala?
Well, in the Constitution of Venezuela, it says if the president vacates office, like he leaves or he gets killed, or if there's some reason why he's not no longer can hold office. It's just like in the U.S. Constitution, right? If the president can, like we have our 25th Amendment and all that stuff, if the president can no longer hold office, then the Speaker of the Assembly, then you can hold a vote in the Assembly, and the Speaker of the Assembly can become president. Well, guess what? Maduro is still there. The guy that was elected was still there. So literally what this cat has done is he said, oh, Maduro's not there. Like, I just saw him on the news. He seems quite there, in my opinion. So he's literally said, the guy isn't there, so I'm president. I've never run, but that's my excuse. And the idea that there are some Democrats, and bless Bernie Sanders for not giving into this pressure, and I hope he doesn't.
I hope
because
he doesn't,
You know, he's beginning to make noise like, well, I don't like Maduro, okay, Bernie, be very careful of giving in to Trump by bullshit.
Right.
Okay? I will say that Tulsi Gabbard is strong, and because you know why? Because she's a wounded warrior.
Mm-hmm.
She is, she served in our military. She took the bullets. She took the shrapnel. She's still wounded today. And so she has the guts to say, when I see bullshit, I'm going to call it.
Yes. Well, good for her. So Greg Pals, my chat room has been doing the research here. You mentioned Senator Gillespie. There is no Gillespie in the U.S. Senate. There's an Ann Gillespie, who's a state senator in Illinois.
I mean,
Kirsten Gillibrand? Were you talking
Kirsten Gillibrand? Yeah, I'm losing my mind.
Right.
Okay.
So that's who you're talking about. And I got it.
Gillibrand, who said, take a look at what she said about the legitimately elected president of Venezuela. That's her term, legitimately elected. When was this election, Kirsten?
Oh, my God. Well, someone needs to ask her that. So, again, I hope people go to Greg Palast.
No, but don't,
To GregPalast.com and look at the pictures. Look at Guaido's party members in the National Assembly. It's a very white group. And then you look at their political opposition in Congress who support Maduro, and they're all people of color. They are, and it just shows, you know, it underscores your headline in Venezuela, white supremacy is a key to Trump's coup. And it is a coup.
And you
it's,
know, yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad you wrote this because we're being force-fed the one narrative that Guaido is the interim president and Maduro is this evil dictator. Now, granted, the one thing we can agree on is that the people of Venezuela are suffering, but we're not helping them by interfering, are we?
Well, what we need to do, we're embargoing them. Give them their money. What Maduro said is, we're not beggars. You know, it's like someone literally comes in, steals everything in your house, withholds all your salary, takes your bank account. This is exactly what the U.S. and Britain and Canada are doing, and then throwing some candy through the window and say, well, why won't you let your kids have the candy?
Yeah, right.
While you're starving them.
Right.
They're not starving food for a couple weeks for a couple thousand people. There are 5 million people at risk. 5 million. And it's a wealthy nation. And they say, just give us the wealth you are withholding. Okay? Now, if you think Maduro is bad, then let the Venezuelan people make that decision.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you this. You know? Yeah, let's... Okay. There's provision in the Constitution to call another election. And call another election. And that's fine. I'm, you know,
yes,
you know
call
me,
an election.
You know, Greg Pals,
it's democracy.
Is what I do.
Absolutely.
That's my business. But, you know, when I see, I'm so outraged by Gillibrand, and I'm sorry I missed it.
That's okay. Well, that's why I wanted to get it clear.
It makes me choke up. Right.
Absolutely.
Because I don't want you to miss the fact that Gillibrand has made this statement about the elected officials.
Yeah.
And like you say, you have a couple, especially out of Florida, where you have this excessive influence of the Cuban
and the Venezuelans.
The
town of Weston, which is just a couple of towns over,
yes,
is largely populated with expat patriots from Venezuela. A lot of Venezuelans.
And I'm going to tell you right now, I don't have to look. I know. I know which part of the population
yes, you
they are
do.
From.
They're all
they're
white.
They're not from the black indigenous
nope.
part
nope.
of the population.
They're as white as I am. Yeah.
Yes, and that's the trick. And you can't understand Venezuela without understanding racism. Imagine if Obama were elected and basically white supremacists said he has to be removed from office because we've got a white guy who's never run for office and we'll just make Trump president. Well, how about Pence?
Oh, God.
And, you know, it is so outrageous. And I'm rarely this exercised about something. You know, there was a... This is about stealing a nation to steal its oil.
I've seen this movie before. This is history repeating itself, just different players.
You know, and it's all down, and the media is loving this whole thing. Oh, Maduro won't let them bring in the food. What? They're going to bring in some scraps of food for a couple of people and say, oh, look, we've saved the people of Venezuela. Give them their money. They can pay for food. It's a very wealthy nation, and they can pay for their food. If you would give them the money that you've stolen from them, that's sitting in the U.S. Treasury, that's sitting in the British Exchequer.
Amazing.
And by the way, it's not a minor thing that that this money is being held supposedly to secure the American creditors. You know, can you name the number one American creditor of Venezuela? I want you to take a wild guess. Name a bank for me.
Bank of America.
Goldman Sachs, you're right.
Okay, same thing, right.
Okay, Goldman Sachs is number one creditor that behind Citgo, and they want to make sure they get their money first. So they're embargoing the nation, bringing down, collapsing its oil industry so there's no parts for the oil fields, they can't produce oil. Oh, that's the other thing, is they embargo the oil industry and they say, gee, their oil production is going down. So then they have to pay off Goldman Sachs, which is owed money by Venezuela, so they steal the money and give it to Goldman Sachs. Steve Mnuchin, remember, as Treasury Secretary, came out of Goldman Sachs.
Sure.
And on top of that, who's the number one buyer of Venezuela's oil on the planet? Which corporation do you think?
I was going to say we are Exxon.
Well, no, they were the producer. They kicked out.
Buyers.
But the number one buyer is a four-letter word, K-O-C-H. Koch Industries has giant refineries on the Gulf Coast, which are designed specifically and only for Venezuelan oil. They can only take oil from Venezuela.
Wow.
Except there's one exception. If the Trans-Alaska,
Keystone XL?
The Keystone XL pipeline is completed, that will take that crappy, shitty gunk from Canada and bring it down to Texas. You know, no one seems to ask, why are we bringing oil to Texas? Texas has a little oil. The answer is because the Koch refineries cannot use Texas oil. They have to use super heavy oil, and there's only two sources, Canada, and there's no pipeline for it, or Venezuela, where it's shipped in by tanker across the Gulf of Mexico. So it's the Kochs took the oil from Venezuela and kept some of the money and gave some of the money to Steve Mnuchin and to Goldman Sachs.
Wow.
And that's what's happening. It's Koch, it's Goldman Sachs, it's white supremacists, it's Donald Trump, and of course the Democratic Congress people from Florida are saying, how wonderful, Koch, Goldman Sachs, Donald Trump, these are great people to lead to control our foreign policy in Latin America. And, of course, John Bolton, you know, that great humanitarian who was our national security advisor, who is saying, literally, if we can't overthrow them through these means, we will use the military.
And now...
So anyone out there ready to die for Venezuela's oil?
And to make matters worse, and we've only got like a minute and a half left, Trump appoints... Elliot Abrams as the envoy to Venezuela. Oh my God!
Yes, and it's not to Venezuela. It's to the white guys that they've picked
up.
But remember, this is all about white supremacy, armed, dangerous, and sitting on oil. And if you want the information, I'm going to have a part two to my story.
Okay.
So just check out GregPalast.com in the next week. And
you got
sorry
it.
Sorry for. Mispronouncing.
That's okay. We got it straightened out. Kirsten Gillibrand, had a big meeting with Penny Pfizer or something from a big pharmaceutical company. She's not my first choice. Greg Palast, you are a gem. Thank you for bringing this story to our attention. As always, I didn't even get to ask you about North Carolina 9 in 20 seconds. Your thoughts?
That's the least problem of race and vote theft in North Carolina.
Right.
Stay tuned.
Stay tuned. Okay. Greg Palast, thank you so much. People can find you at GregPalast.com, of course, on Twitter, Greg_Palast. Thank you so much, Greg. Have a great weekend.
You're the best.
Take care. Bye. You too. Bye. I mentioned earlier, I forgot to expound on it. Russian Doll, the Netflix series with Natasha Lyonne, where she dies over and over again. Really good. And if you enjoy it, there's a book that I loved back in the 90s that I think this is based on. It's called Replay by an author named Ken Grisham, I believe. Ken Grisham. I'm going to have to find it. I've got a copy of the book here because I used to give it to everybody because it's that good. Replay, I believe, by Ken Grisham or something like that. Anyway, thanks for listening, everyone. Have a wonderful weekend, and I'll see you back here on Tuesday. Bye. It's Ken Grimwood. Grimwood.